Chapter 6. The Power of a Crisis. How Leaders Create Habits Through Accident and Design. 1. The patient was already unconscious when he was wheeled into the operating room at Rhode Island Hospital. His jaw was slack, his eyes closed, and the top of an intubation tube peaked above his lips. As a nurse hooked him up to a machine that would force air into his lungs during surgery, one of his arms slipped off the gurney, the skin mottled with liver spots. The man was 86 years old, and 3 days earlier had fallen at home. Afterward, he had trouble staying awake and answering questions, and so eventually his wife called an ambulance. In the emergency room, a doctor asked him what happened, but the man kept nodding off in the middle of his sentences. A scan of his head revealed why. The fall had slammed his brain against his skull, causing what's known as a subdural hematoma. Blood was pooling within the left portion of his cranium, pushing against the delicate folds of tissue inside his skull. The fluid had been building for almost 72 hours, and those parts of the brain that controlled his breathing and heart were beginning to falter. Unless the blood was drained, the man would die. At the time, Rhode Island Hospital was one of the nation's leading medical institutions, the main teaching hospital for Brown University, and the only Level 1 trauma center in southeastern New England. Inside the tall brick and glass building, physicians had pioneered cutting-edge medical techniques, including the use of ultrasound waves to destroy tumors inside a patient's body. In 2002, the National Coalition on Healthcare rated the hospital's intensive care unit as one of the finest in the country. But by the time the elderly patient arrived, Rhode Island Hospital also had another reputation, a place riven by internal tensions. There were deep, simmering enmities between nurses and physicians. In 2000, the nurses' union had voted to strike after complaining that they were being forced to work dangerously long hours. More than 300 of them stood outside the hospital with signs reading, "Stop slavery," and "They can't take away our pride." "This place can be awful," one nurse recalled telling a reporter. "The doctors can make you feel like you're worthless, like you're disposable, like you should be thankful to pick up after them." Administrators eventually agreed to limit nurses' mandatory overtime, but tensions continued to rise. A few years later, a surgeon was preparing for a routine abdominal operation when a nurse called for a timeout. Such pauses are standard procedure at most hospitals, a way for doctors and staff to make sure mistakes are avoided. The nursing staff at Rhode Island Hospital was insistent on timeouts, particularly since a surgeon had accidentally removed the tonsils of a girl who was supposed to have eye surgery. Timeouts were supposed to catch such errors before they occurred. At the abdominal surgery, when the OR nurse asked the team to gather around the patient for a timeout and to discuss their plan, the doctor headed for the doors. "Why don't you lead this?" the surgeon told the nurse. "I'm going to step outside for a call. Knock when you're ready." "You're supposed to be here for this, doctor," she replied. "You can handle it," the surgeon said as he walked toward the door. "Doctor, I don't feel this is appropriate." The doctor stopped and looked at her. "If I want your damn opinion, I'll ask for it," he said. "Don't ever question my authority again. If you can't do your job, get the hell out of my OR." The nurse led the timeout, retrieved the doctor a few minutes later, and the procedure occurred without complication. She never contradicted a physician again, and never said anything when other safety policies were ignored. Some doctors were fine, and some were monsters, one nurse who worked at Rhode Island Hospital in the mid-2000s told me. "We called it the glass factory, because it felt like everything could crash down at any minute." To deal with these tensions, the staff had developed informal rules, habits unique to the institution that help divert the most obvious conflicts. Nurses, for instance, always double-checked the orders of error-prone physicians and quietly made sure that correct doses were entered. They took extra time to write clearly on patients' charts, lest a hasty surgeon make the wrong cut. One nurse told me they developed a system of color codes to warn one another. "We put doctors' names in different colors on the whiteboards," she said. "Blue meant nice, red meant jerk, and black meant whatever you do, don't contradict them or they'll take your head off." Rhode Island Hospital was a place filled with a corrosive culture. Unlike at Alcoa, where carefully designed keystone habits surrounding worker safety had created larger and larger successes, inside Rhode Island Hospital, habits emerged on the fly among nurses seeking to offset physician arrogance. The hospital's routines weren't carefully thought out. Rather, they appeared by accident and spread through whispered warnings until toxic patterns emerged. This can happen within any organization where habits aren't deliberately planned. Just as choosing the right keystone habits can create amazing change, the wrong ones can create disasters. And when the habits within Rhode Island Hospital imploded, they caused terrible mistakes.